Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Kansas City gets its Super Bowl win, 50 years in the waiting. Sammy Parker, former Kansas City Chief wide receiver, former Oregon Duck great, joining us now. What did you think of the game?
I thought it was a great game. I knew it was going to be a nail-biter, and I think we executed really well and did the things that we knew we could do.
First, let's start with the Niners. Where did they lose this game? What went wrong for them?
I didn't think they ran the ball well as they did previously. I know the last game prior to the Super Bowl, the running back Rakeem rushed for 200-plus yards. We were able to neutralize that, and we kept him under 60 yards yesterday. So I think they kind of got away from some of the things that they do really well, which is run the ball.
What does the Super Bowl championship mean for Kansas City? You played there. You're still close with the fans. You still root for Kansas City. I saw people tweeting at you during the game and after the game. What's it mean to Kansas City?
It means a whole lot. Obviously, this year for the Chiefs was a really, really big year. With winning the Super Bowl as well as winning the AFC Championship, the Chiefs, the AFC Championship trophy is named after the former owner of the Chiefs, Lamar Hunt, who passed away a few years ago. So just to kind of get that trophy back home where it belongs, and then now in the Super Bowl, I think that's really big for the city and everybody around. I think they just the momentum kind of riding off of that, and the way that our team is playing really right now has been great for the city.
You've played in a ton of big games. You've made a ton of big plays. That stage or a playoff stage or a Super Bowl stage, third and 15, you're down 10 points. Mahomes throws the 44-yard pass to Tyreek Hill. I got to know what you were thinking as that's developing.
For me, that whole game, I was kind of thinking that we needed to take a little bit, just kind of take what they were giving us. I think we were trying to force a lot of deep throws throughout the game, and then that one just came up literally right after I was getting ready to tweet out. We just got to take what they're giving us, and, they gave us a big play. But I think, the front line for the Niners didn't get as much pressure as we thought they were going to get. At least that I thought they were going to get with those former Oregon Ducks on there with Buckner and Armstead and Bosa and Ford. They had a really good front seven, but they didn't get as much pressure on us as I thought they were. But we had a couple turnovers. And I think this, being able to capitalize on the mistakes that they made, they didn't get to capitalize on the ones that we made. So I think we just kind of took advantage of the opportunities that we had. But making a big play on that stage is incredible. It's kind of remind me of, being at the Fiesta Bowl and having an opportunity to make a big play that I had, a 79-yard touchdown from Joey Harrington. I think that was, a really, really big play, and one of the big plays in Oregon history. I mean, obviously they have a lot of great plays that they've had with the Kenny Wheaton pick and some of the other big plays that they had throughout history. But, I think, once you get a chance, an opportunity to make that big play, you got to step up when your number's called.
Sammy Parker with us, former Oregon Duck great, Kansas City Chief wide receiver as well. The Ducks program, when you see it now, I know you watch games, you're active on social media. What do you think of what Mario Cristobal's doing with the program?
I think we're doing a whole lot of good stuff over there. Recruiting-wise, you're getting some great talent coming from some national talent from all across the country. We just picked up a guy from Kansas City area. We got the guys from California, some guys from Seattle. And then we got a hometown guy I see that we're recruiting that just committed a few weeks ago, a linebacker. So I think that we're doing a really great job, in the recruiting aspect and putting some good things together defensively. I think this is probably one of the best defenses that I've seen in Oregon history, at least since I've been watching Oregon football. us to put something together like that to be one of the premier defenses in the country.
I know you're involved now with 7-on-7. How has that developed over the years for people who aren't tuned into that world? How important is that? How big is it? What is that scene like?
For me, I think it's really big. It kind of depends on where you're at. Obviously, me being in Kansas City, being able to, you know, to kind of help develop these young men and help elevate their game. The more reps you can get, it's just like tying your shoe. The more time you tie your shoe, the more baskets you put up, like Kobe. Obviously, you know what I'm saying, things become second nature. So with being able to, you know what I'm saying, have my guys run through route trees and going over footwork, things like that. So when they get a chance to get in front of college coaches, they're prepared and ready to showcase what they can do.
You know, you mentioned Kobe and sort of what was, I think, a heavy week where a lot of people did thinking. And, you know, are you a girl dad?
Yeah, I am. Me and my daughter were really close. She actually plays basketball now, so being able to go to her game and kind of reflecting on the things that, you know, kind of happened with Kobe. And I'm like, man, you know, with me going just to watch her train and then going to her games and, you know, kind of spending time with her. I didn't really tweet no pictures out or post any pictures of me and her during her basketball stuff after the Kobe incident because I just didn't want to kind of be on that bandwagon type of deal. So, I kind of kept that just kind of, you know, that sacred to myself and my daughters, kind of keep that between us. But, you know, it's been a really great journey just to kind of watch her grow as she has been in the last year on the basketball court and kind of looking forward to what she's going to do coming up in the near future.
You, as a kid, you played baseball. You were a good baseball player. You're obviously a good football player. You get kids today who are being encouraged to specialize, even if coaches say they're not, a lot of them do, sort of put that pressure on kids. How do you battle that as a kid today?
I think it's very difficult for kids. A lot of people like to have control over the kids and try to, you know, force them to do one thing or the other. I think a lot of college coaches would love to see guys, you know, do multiple sports so they can kind of see, you know, that they're well-rounded athlete just in case they have to transition to another position or anything like that. I think with them just kind of forcing their hand to either stick to basketball or stick to football or stick to track, it kind of putting those guys in the bind. Obviously, we've seen, you know, a guy like Devin Allen, who was at the University of Oregon, who was a big-time playmaker on the field, but obviously he had those two big knee injuries. Going into the track and, you know, do some really great things and go to the Olympics and all those things. So I think if he hadn't been able to showcase that he was able to do both, who knows if he would have just kind of stayed in that football realm and just kind of been, you know, injured and all that type of stuff. But with him being knowing that he can compete at a high level on the track and able to do so, he went out there and did that and kind of hung his cleats up and doing really great things on the track now.
Former Oregon Duck, great Sammy Parker with us. You know, I look back at sort of your time at Oregon and, you know, I don't know what your aspirations were. I got here in 2002. You were in the 2004 draft. I watched you play and I said, this kid's going to play in the NFL. Did you want the NFL at what age and how focused were you on it?
That's always been my goal. Just growing up, I had no clue about college or anything like that when I was the age of 7. People were asking me, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And that was the first thing that came out of my mouth. I want to be an NFL football player. And, you know, kind of scary, but just, like, fast forward to when I was actually playing, like, one of the guys that I played with, and Pop Warner, who asked me that question, was like, man, it's crazy because he was working with the Chargers doing something over there. And he was like, man, it's crazy that at the age of 7 that you told me you wanted to play professional football. You know, fast forward to, you know, me being at that time, I think around 24, he was like, that you're actually, you know what I'm saying, living out the dream that you, you know, kind of put out there. So I think a lot of people, you know what I'm saying, they have the opportunity to do whatever they want to do. It's just kind of on them. If they put their mind to it, they can get it done. And I was able to do so. And now, you know, kind of hoping, you know what I'm saying, do the same with, you know what I'm saying, the kids that I train and also my daughter as well.
I look, you know, as your time after football, you know, you go to work as an intern with the Chiefs, you spend some time with the coaching staff, now you're doing your thing with 7-on-7. What do you think the Niners are doing today? Are they dissecting the last 7 minutes of the game, kicking themselves, asking themselves what goes wrong, or do you need to step away after and give it a day or two after the season ends?
I think the game of football, there's a never-ending thing that's going to get better. So I think right now, I think the Niners are in the film room, especially Kyle Shanahan. He's in the film room trying to break down and see what's going on and how could he have made better decisions and things like that. Because obviously, you know, with him being in this situation, I think with him having the thing that he had, the scenario what he had was a couple years ago when he was with the Atlanta Falcons. Now this situation, he's going to try to figure out what he needs to do as better as a coach, and you know, how can he, you know what I'm saying? Because obviously, kind of letting those two Super Bowls slip out of his hands is kind of tragic for him, I'm sure.
I just saw a stat that Mahomes' 44-yard completion to Tyreek Hill on 3rd and 15. It traveled 57.1 yards in the air. It was the longest completed pass by air distance by Patrick Mahomes this season. I mean, it was the ball was in the air so long, Sammy, I thought, oh, the safety's got it. I can't believe that he didn't get there and make that play.
Right, because I think that on that play, when he kind of released inside, I think the safety didn't want to get beat across his face.
Mm-hmm.
So then he ended up breaking it back to the corner. I think that kind of gave him opportunity, you know, to kind of, because, I mean, with that speed, if you watch that play, you can see how fast Tyreek came off the ball. And, you know, as you say, he's a cheetah. I mean, you can't let a cheetah get run by you, because if you do, that means there's going to be a home run ball every single time. So the way he came off that ball, you definitely did not want to get beat on that post. And I think when he broke off back to that corner, I think he just created so much separation that he was able to, you know what I'm saying, kind of cradle that thing in and have a big play for it that we really needed.
You run that in the 7-on-7?
Nah, I think I'm going to steal it, though.
I love it. Sammy, I appreciate you making time for us. I know a lot of Oregon Duck fans across the state still root for you and think about you. You brought a lot of fun memories to Oregon football, so I appreciate what you did in your career, and I appreciate you making time for us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. There's Sammy Parker. Good follow on Twitter. Check him out. He's doing 7-on-7 now. He's got his own program and, of course, rooting for the Chiefs. We were on opposite sides of this thing. See, it's mighty big of me to bring Sammy Parker on the show. I'm just not that kind of fan. I have friends. I got to be honest. I have one friend who wouldn't speak to me after his team lost. He was in such a bad mood when his team lost. He had to go work out. He had to, you know, like, he didn't want to talk. To me, that was like, okay, that's not healthy. Yeah, like, you should be like, I got quiet. I was going, where, and I was thinking like a journalist, like, what happened? What did the Niners do wrong? What could they have done better? You know, did they, and I also noted, look, I don't blame the officials. There were a lot of people on social media blaming the officials. The officials weren't calling anything. Okay? But it went both ways. There weren't a lot of flags in this game. The Niners probably should have had a delay of game penalty. Didn't get one. The George Kittle pass interference call, was there holding? Probably you could call holding on every play if you want to. Now, officials didn't cost the Niners the game. The Niners cost the Niners the game. And I don't just blame Kyle Shanahan. There were some execution problems. But Kyle Shanahan did some things wrong in this game, and he's got to be, as a coach, holed up in a film room right now, going, all right, if I could do this over again, you know, God willing, you get back there and you get another chance at it. That's the whole thing, is you've seen so many times for teams who have played on a big level. Like, I was in a restaurant in New York for the New York, New Jersey Super Bowl. And I am in a restaurant and I'm sitting at a table. I could see the door and Marv Levy walks in, former Buffalo Bills coach. I recognize him immediately. We've had him on this show a few times. Really smart guy, can talk a lot of things outside of football. That's why I liked interviewing Marv Levy on this show. He stood at the front door waiting for a table for like 20 minutes. And I thought to myself, if Marv Levy had only won one Super Bowl, one time in three shots, if he had won one of those games, Marv Levy's not waiting for a table in New York. But instead, he's standing there. It's obviously Marv Levy. And people are like, oh, there's former coach Marv Levy. Nobody was going, there's a Super Bowl champion. Get him a table. You got the bald-faced truth statewide on the BFT Radio Network. I pay attention to the stock market. I look at the stock market in the mornings. I just take a glance. How's the market doing? What's going on? And have you guys seen what Tesla stock has done in the last 3 or 4 months?
No.
It's like doubled in price. It went up today nearly 20%. Elon Musk, when the stock was in the 300s, had said it was going to go to 420, code for marijuana. And it hit 420 and has kept going. It's now at 770 with the market about to close in 5 minutes. It has, what is the, like, I'm just curious, because when I think of Tesla, I think of rocket ships, I think of Elon Musk. What's the brand of Tesla in your mind?
I think of the traditional car that drives itself.
They do no marketing. And that's why I'm asking that. So they spend no marketing dollars. It's all done, like, word of mouth. Elon Musk being Elon Musk, tweeting out photos or videos of himself singing. What's the brand of Tesla in your mind, Peter?
It's sort of the same. I'm thinking of the luxury car that you gotta order, you know, special order to get and wait 3 months. I mean, obviously there is all the other avenues that Elon Musk is in, but mostly I just think the new modern luxury car.
They've become bigger than Ford. Their value is bigger than the Ford Motor Company.
What's driving the big jump so recently?
A lot of it is they had good earnings that came out last week. It was positive earnings, but just the analysts are all raising their expectations. And this morning, an analyst came out and said he put his target at $808 a share, and it jumped. The stock jumped $120 a share today. Biggest gain that they've had in the history of their stock. So
that is wild, but I also think that a good way that Tesla is kind of getting the word out is by rideshare companies like Lyft and Uber.
Okay.
They have Teslas that do Lyft and Uber, and I got in one. And the guy was just saying, like, look at all this. He was basically on the iPad the whole ride.
Selling you the car.
Yeah.
Ah, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they say they do no marketing. Maybe it's just no traditional marketing. Maybe those cars are out there and interesting. They came out with the truck model, and it was a disaster. It was supposed to be like bulletproof glass, and the glass shattered when they threw something against it. But the stock just keeps going up and up and up. I've been watching it now for about 4 or 5 months going, this is interesting. And I was curious what would happen when it hit 420, because I think he was high when he tweeted that. He was like, going to 420. All right. This, of course, brings us to the point in the show where we give you the big splash. It's the one thing you need to know today.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Sir, down there.
The big splash. Brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the weight. Download the new Sport Clips haircuts app and check in.
Well, for the second straight week, Damian Lillard is your Western Conference Player of the Week. He's on fire in the terms of NBA jams. Damian Lillard has scored 61, 47, 50, 36, 48, and 51 points. Been fun to watch. I know there were 51 total points scored in the Super Bowl, but Lillard does that 2 times a week. I don't think he's impressed. This is a player that came into the league drafted number 6 overall in 2012. Disrespected, overlooked, Weber State, all of that. He's got a chip on his shoulder. I wrote about this on Sunday morning. What's motivating Damian Lillard? I'll tell you what's motivating him. In April of last year, in the lobby of a hotel in Oklahoma City, after game 3 of their playoff series with the Thunder, this is before he hit the 37-foot shot, I asked Lillard, is that chip ever going to fall off your shoulder? He said, quote, I haven't won a championship. I haven't been an MVP. There are still things out there that I'm after, end quote. Let that sink in. Championship, an MVP, that's what Damian Lillard's chasing. And his recent run, it's going to get him some votes in the league's most valuable player voting. He's carrying the Blazers. They'll have to continue to win games if he's going to be taken seriously as an MVP candidate. But Damian Lillard is your Western Conference Player of the Week for the second week.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.